The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello, and welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is June 27th, 2008. This is episode number 134, and I am Bob Hayes, your host, here today to bring you the best in motorcycle road racing stuff, news, commentary, gossip, chit-chats, all that kind of stuff. We have it here on MotoGPOD. So, got a big show today. Got a long call with Jules wrapping up Donington. It was an interesting race, to say the least, and Jules and I are going to talk about that a lot. We got a whole lot of email from our UK listeners, and I do appreciate that. Thank you, guys, to all of you out there. I hope I managed to reply to all of it. I know Jules and I were both working on that and all that, but sometimes, work kind of steps in and all of that sort of thing, and when you're working long hours, sometimes the last thing you want to do is come home and answer a bunch of email. And I know that sounds kind of lazy, but hey, sorry, that's how it is. So let's start the show off, before we get to our call with Jules, with a couple of shout outs, a couple of mentions, and I'm going to be kind of clicking back and forth here on my email, so you might actually hear the mouse as I click here on my computer. The first one, Martin Darlington in the United Kingdom, sent me an email a while ago, and we've exchanged a few emails back and forth, and Martin's a good guy. And one thing he asked me to mention, and I'm going to go ahead and mention it again because their website is up now, and this is the Wales Air Ambulance Helimed Rideout Bike Run. And this is in the United Kingdom, of course, because that's where Wales is. And this takes place on July 12th from Llandudno to Swansea. So you're screwing around there on the coast and all kinds of great stuff. Swansea's on the coast, I do believe, isn't it? I know the Who played there. Hi, how about that? And the website is at helimedrideout.co.uk. Of course, I will put a link on the website, helimedrideout.co.uk. It's now fully operational, and folks can register through the site to receive their information packets. The cost is £7 for each rider and £3 for a pillion. And this not only gets you into the ride, it also includes a barbecue, a party, and a charity auction at the far end. There's tickets for a GSXR 750 raffle. Those will be on sale throughout the event. And Martin, in fact, is just the delighted owner of a K5 GSXR 750, partly due to having done the Ron Haslam Race School track day, and he absolutely loved it. He didn't say exactly where that Ron Haslam school was. I know they run one at Donington. I'm not sure, is that the one you went to, Martin, or not? But I saw the ads for that, and I thought, well, I'd love to do that. But no matter which track they had that school at, I'm sure it was really, really good stuff. So all of you listeners that are in Europe or thinking about a trip to the United Kingdom or something along those lines, and you'll be there in mid-July, why don't you go ahead and take a quick trip to the helimedrideout.co.uk website, see what they've got going on. It's an excellent charity, and it benefits the air ambulance, and this is the same air ambulance that evacuates guys from the Isle of Man and all that sort of thing. So this is good stuff. It's a worthy cause. It's well worth taking a look at. Next thing I want to mention, this is sort of connected to the Midwest Cafe Racing Association, who I'm going to be visiting here in August shortly. That's coming up closer and closer. I'm getting kind of excited, only a couple of months away. Anthony Dean and Dan Jassa were kind enough to invite me out there, and so I'll be going to St. Louis there in August. But how this all sort of ties into this show is Anthony Dean sent me an email, and this is really cool because he got his picture in Road Racing World in an ad for the Red Flag Fund charity auction, which was taking place Saturday, August 23rd, 2008, at Blackhawk Farms Raceway in South. I'm going to mess this one up. South Beloit, Illinois. And the events following CCS races, there's dinner and drinks available, benefits the injured road racers across the country. And as you know, the Red Flag Fund is a good thing, and it takes care of all sorts of great charity stuff. They need donations. They need to have an auction going on. They are having an auction going on, and they need donations. So you can check that out at redflagfund.org. And Anthony's connection to that is that his picture is in the ad that's in Road Racing World. He made the ad. He's down there at the bottom on the yellow SV, looking extraordinarily leaned over, much, much tighter corner than I tend to take. But so it looks good on you, and good for you, Anthony. And I hope that that's a successful event for you guys. So make sure you guys check that one out, redflagfund.org. All right. So there's our couple of quick shout outs that we've got. Why don't we talk a little bit about some of the news? Because we've got ASIN coming up, and ASIN is a Saturday race. We have some news as I record this on Thursday evening because free practice has already taken place. So if you haven't been following the news, or if you just like to hear it again, the big story, I think, that came out of Thursday's practice session, there's actually a couple of really big ones. The first one is from Suzuki. And now, this is not good news. This is bad news. Loris Caparossi, unfortunately, is making his comeback at ASIN following a collision at Catalunya earlier this month. And he vindicated his decision to participate this weekend by setting the 12th quickest time in the morning practice. Unfortunately, in the afternoon session, he crashed in a fast left-hand corner. He high-sided his Suzuki GSVR. Bike and Caparossi tumbled towards the gravel at high speed, and his right inner forearm got stuck underneath the bike. It resulted in a substantial and deep hole. This is from the press release. They call it a substantial and deep hole in his arm. So that's not good. Caparossi was immediately taken to the medical center he's operated on and repair the wound. Unfortunately, he will not take any further part in this weekend's events at ASIN. So Caparossi's not going to be racing at ASIN. And the news gets even worse because AMA champion Ben Spies, who we all know rode the Suzuki in the place of Caparossi there at Donington and did quite well, as Jules and I will discuss. He is at ASIN, but he's not going to be replacing Caparex. So that's a huge bummer, both for the Suzuki team, for Loris Caparossi, and really for Ben Spies. So that's a real shame, and we do hope that Loris gets well very, very soon, so that we can see him back out there on track doing well. Jules and I have talked quite a lot about, you know, Loris is, he's the oldest guy in the paddock, and he's one of the old pros and all of that, and we like to see him do well. And this is not how we want to see you and your career there, Loris, you know, that is due to injury. That would not be a good thing at all. So good luck, Loris. And good luck to Christopher Mullen, who did quite well in Thursday free practice as well. But it's just, you know, like I said, that we're mostly talking about Loris Caparossi. The other big news that came out Thursday's practice session was Casey Stoner shattering the pole position record set in 2006. And he shattered that record in the first day's free practice sessions on, you know, Thursday free practice session. He shatters the record by 0.3 seconds. Now, this is significant because normally the pole record is, you know, this is the fastest time around the track. The practice sessions are for practice. You're not typically going to be going out there and breaking those sort of records. So on an 800cc machine, he broke a record that was set by a 990cc machine on qualifying tires by 0.3 seconds. That's a substantial achievement. He was 0.7 seconds faster than Valentino Rossi, who was his closest time on the day there at the practice session. So Stoner is on fire. And this is good. So he may have had a bit of a slump for your past few races or whatever, but as we saw at Donington, things seem to be shaping up. And apparently, if we can make that leap to judge just on Thursday's activities, it's going to be sort of continuing. I was taken to task in some emails that we exchanged with, let's see, John Kelly. There we go. John Kelly basically said that Jules and I weren't giving Casey enough credit, even kind of somewhat accused us of being Casey bashers. And I'll admit, I always punctuated my remarks about Casey that, you know, it was the perfect storm because, you know, you had an excellent rider combined with an excellent team, an excellent motorcycle, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's why 2007 was such a great success for Casey. And I still stand behind those remarks. And I don't mean that to denigrate Casey's talent in any way, shape, or form. He's clearly an extraordinarily talented rider, and he's doing a top-notch job. And I do think that he deserves a lot of credit, all of the credit, for going out there and doing well, particularly this year when everybody else on the Ducati is not doing anything like as well. I mean, it's not even close. So I think that, you know, Casey is a fantastic rider. However, I still have to punctuate these remarks with the fact that, well, my opinion that he's just not quite as likable of a personality as, say, Valentino Rossi or some of the other guys that we see in the MotoGP paddock. And this may be something that Casey Stoner can grow into, or it may just be this is his personality and this is how he is. Jules and I talk about this one in the call as well, so I don't want to go into too great a detail. And I think, though, that it's perfectly reasonable for me to say that I totally respect and admire and everything else, Casey's writing ability, Casey's skills, Casey's dedication, but that I can also still say at the same time that I think he's a bit cold, perhaps, is one word, or just not. He's just not a celebrity. He's not comfortable being a celebrity, and unfortunately, the state of MotoGP is what it is. You kind of have to be, and also as fans, as we are of MotoGP and motorcycle road racing and all that, we're totally entitled to our opinion that we like this guy simply because we sort of like him. I don't think that's completely unreasonable. You don't have to necessarily be a big fan of the guy who's the best racer out there on the track solely because he's the best racer out there. There's all sorts of reasons why you might be rooting for one guy or another, all of that out there. And while they may be somewhat shallow, you know, it might be the reason, well, he's from my country, so I'm going to root for him no matter what. Or, you know, I like him, I like his style, or whatever it is, you know. But this is a passionate sport, and if you can't choose that who you want to be a fan of, then what's the point? So I'm not saying that, you know, that Casey's not a good rider or anything like that. I'm just saying there are guys out there that, frankly, I would rather see win. So enough about Casey Stoner. One last thing before we get to our call with Jules, and that is an email that I got from Greg Shanting about our passing comments. You might remember in episode 132, I talked about racers versus winners and the different types of passing, and I compared it to pizza and all sorts of stuff and kind of babbled on and blathered. And Greg sent me an email, and I thought it was pretty good. He says, just a couple of comments on the passing editorial. He says, each form of racing has evolved into what it is based on three things: the machinery used in the racing, the places that the racing takes place, whether it's dirt, asphalt, or water, or in the air, snow, ice, all sorts of different things too, Greg. And three, the rules that are put in place to create fair competition. In MotoGP, small, fast vehicles on relatively wide surfaces running a sprint race creates a very tactical type of racing, and aggressive passing is a necessary part of winning, which we know and love, and that's why we watch MotoGP. As a contrast, Formula One has larger, very fast vehicles on a relatively narrow, because of the vehicle size, course, and they run longer races. So this creates an environment that requires a more strategic approach to passing and pit stops. NASCAR is somewhat in the middle, in Greg's opinion. They run vehicles that are very closely matched on large open tracks that create an atmosphere where drafting is a necessity and draft passing is common. They also run long races with pit stops that adds a layer of strategy. And those, as Greg says, those are just his own observations. He's not a big NASCAR or a Formula One fan, but I think they're valid observations. Then he goes on to compare, and this is the part of the email I liked. He says, I think that each of these sports attract different fans. As an analogy, and here we're going to digress a little bit into stick and ball, but it's a good analogy. As an analogy, look at baseball and football, and we're talking American football here. Baseball and football fans. Baseball fans love it because they get into the strategy and statistics of the game, not so much the action. For any baseball fan, a great day of baseball is also the two most boring words in all of sports, a pitcher's duel. Whereas American football fans enjoy the sport for the action. A great football game has hitting, tackling, running, passing, touchdowns, field goals, all that sort of stuff. The game is much more tactical and dynamic and constantly moving. How do I get the ball to the next first down is all they're worried about. So MotoGP is a bit more like football, while Formula One is more like baseball, while NASCAR is more like hockey, kind of boring on TV, but a lot of fun if you're at the event, which I thought that was a clever analogy there. And I like that a lot. So thank you very much, Greg, for that email. And I think it put a good cap on my passing commentary back there in episode 132. All right, we've let this intro go on long enough, so why don't we go ahead and get into our call, our Donington race wrap-up with Jules, and let's do that right now. All right, we got Jules on the phone today. How are you doing today, Jules?
I'm doing fine. How are you, Bob?
Oh, doing excellent, excellent. Nice to talk to you again after only a week. Going to talk about Donington, one of my favorite races. I feel sort of an affinity to the Donington track. That was my first MotoGP and being kind of an Anglophile and all of that. And I really do like the track. I think that it's a beautiful circuit except for the Melbourne hairpin. and the complete lack of facilities. But other than that, you know, but no, I mean, if they would just, if they could just sort of, I don't know, I've seen a lot of emails about Donington. We've got so many listeners in England and so much opinion and eyewitness sort of, you know, I was there sort of commentary and stuff like that, that, you know, it's good stuff. And the rumor has it that MotoGP might be going to Silverstone in 2010, which, I don't know, off the top of your head, what do you think of that one, Jules? Just to start things off.
I just don't think Silverstone is a motorcycle track.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's definitely not as interesting as Donington, because it doesn't have as many elevation changes. And I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen a race at Silverstone. I know that Formula One race is there, but the last time I remember seeing anything there, the surface was terrible.
Yeah, agreed.
So I'm guessing that by the time that, you know, 2010 arrives, they're going to be resurfacing that track so that the bikes can go on there. But, you know, British Superbikes raced there, so it can't be that bad.
Yeah, no, yeah. Well, they, you know, British Superbikes have to race pretty much everywhere in Britain that's big. So, and I've seen like highlights of the BSB races at Silverstone, but just judging from what I've seen from Formula Ones, that, yeah, if you're going to pick for a motorcycle track between Silverstone and Donington, I would go with Donington. And, but it is unfortunately the nature of the beast of MotoGP that, unless Donington spends an absolute fortune on bringing their facilities into the 21st century, that, you know, that it looks like Silverstone might possibly be, that rumor might end up being true. But who knows? You know, it still is at this point, as far as I know, just kind of a rumor. I've only heard it from a few different sort of sources and stuff. I'm not sure where it kind of originated from.
Well, you know, the theory is money talks and bullshit walks.
Always. Yes, it's true. Yeah, because one of the other theories / rumors / whatever that I heard was that they're talking about moving Formula One back to Donington. And it's like, yeah, I don't see that happening simply because of the facilities, you know?
Right.
So, yeah. I think a race where they should have MotoGP is Oulton Park. Have you ever seen that hill on the back straight where the motorcycles actually get off the ground and all of that? That's
one of those. Let's bring the TT back into the series.
What was that?
Let's just bring the TT back into the series.
I agree. Sure. What's wrong with it? You know, walls, pubs, all that stuff right next to you. You know, it's great. But yeah, I didn't talk much about the TT. I barely even sort of followed it this year. It's, you know, they used to have pretty good coverage on Speed, and I like to watch my racing on TV. All these Racing Dash Underground and all that business are great, and it's really cool that we have some access to stuff, but I don't know, it's just not the same.
No. And the Guinness one is 14th race, 14th TT race. That's he's getting close to some kind of a record there, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah, it's impressive. I mean, and the Alaman TT is its own animal. When back a couple shows ago, we were talking about racers and winners and all of that, and guys that can, you know, you just like Pedrosa will, or Stoner will, you know, check out and all of that. But it's a bit of a different story when they're racing side by side, and the TT sort of have that built in because you have, you know, the wave start. So they're somewhat racing against the clock, a little bit like rally. And, you know, of course some guys catch up with other guys and all of that, and you actually see, you know, side by side racing, but you can't have side-by-side racing on a course like that.
No, and you know, there was a really interesting discussion years ago on Ride On 2, like when it first got started, the forum got started, we were talking about Joey Dunlop, what kind of a racer he would have been in a MotoGP setting, and whether guys like Rossi and, you know, Biaggi, how they would fare at a TT. And I just think there's just no way to compare, because you don't need to be a precision rider. You just have to have insane intuition and balls to run a TT. I don't think that a rider like Dunlop really did that well on race circuits. I think he was not a precise rider. He was a basically rode by intuition. I remember watching the, you know, V for Victory. You ever see that? Lap that he does with the 16mm camera mounted on board.
Yeah. I have seen it a long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah. He talks about the fact that, you know, there's just too many corners. You don't remember everything. He just knows certain areas where the track might be a little damp always, or where he's going to have to, as he puts it, like right up on the curb.
Yeah. It's literally a curb.
Literally.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And it is, it's like we touched on a race or two ago, that the whole discipline has changed and evolved, and that, the guys that can go out there and really do well in all the different sort of types of racing, it's no longer the case. You can't do it. So the chances of having another Formula One and MotoGP champion like John Surtees, or, you know, at the time, Formula One and motorcycle road racing, whatever you want to call it, champion, are pretty slim.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and it kind of falls into the same thing. Well, all right. That was kind of an interesting little digression. Why don't we talk about Donington?
Okay. Actually, before we go, I did want to say thanks to Martin Darlington and Richard Crawford, who emailed us about the ITV gridwalk, and pointed out that it was done by Martin Brundle, who I kind of had to smack my head because I should have recognized him, because I was actually kind of a fan of his back in the late 80s, early 90s, when I was following Formula One, and he was one of the most skilled and brave drivers out there. He never really had the car to win, but man, he was fun to watch when he was racing.
Right. Another one of those guys that was a little bit in the right place at the wrong time, maybe, sort of a thing, where did he ever actually even win a Formula One race?
He never won. He scored a bunch of podiums, but he never won a GP.
Right. And, you know, it's kind of a shame because, you know, he had the talent. A bit like, you know, Mamola not ever winning a championship, even though really should have.
Yeah, but Brundle was racing during the, you know, Senna years and the...
Right. Right.
And the Gebhardt years, so...
right place at the wrong time, you know, and that sort of thing. It's just somehow that's how it is. You get these, you know, when you're up against Senna or Schumi in his early years or what have you, you know, these are the gods of racing, and if you're only a demigod, then, well, yeah, take what you get.
Yep.
Just ask Max Biaggi. So, okay, we got Superbike coming back here shortly to Misano, so that should be good stuff, yeah. Speaking of Max Biaggi, so we're still all over the map, or at least I am. So let's see. What do we want to start out with talking about Donington? Because I think we should talk a little bit about Donington. The qualifying was hugely wet. And how much do you think that kind of influenced the race as a whole, shook things up? You know, what did it do for various guys' chances there?
I think pretty much everybody on the grid was doing a little bit of you know, eight ball magic, eight ball type tire choosing on race day, because they never really had a good solid dry session until the race. Oh, the warm up, I guess, but
yeah, you know, 20 minutes and it's not quite the same. Yeah,
different temperature. Yeah.
And even during the race, there was just, you know, howling winds. It was very, very windy, which might be a bit less of a factor for the MotoGP bikes, but it's still going to play into it, you know, less of a factor than, say, for the 250s and certainly the 125s, but still plays into it, the wind. And, when you figure that pole position was, 10 seconds off the fastest lap of the race, you know, that's a big difference.
Oh, yeah.
When you normally a pole position lap is a second or two faster than the fastest lap. So it's, you know, they were way off the pace, and it was very, very wet from everything I've seen and read and all of that about it. And of course that got guys, rain sort of specialists like Christopher Mullen, who does very, very well in the wet, and Anthony West, you know, qualified farther up the grid than they may have otherwise.
Right, yeah. Although there was one guy who didn't seem to be struggling at all, and that was Stoner. He was just on rails. He was half a second pretty much ahead of everybody in pretty much every session, I think.
Yeah, because he took pole, and we might as well go ahead and just give away the results. He won the race. And so kind of, you know, what's up with that? And we're back to the whole Casey Stoner thing, and we had exchanged some emails with, unfortunately, I don't have my email right in front of me, so I don't have the name, but that we were accused of Stoner bashing and not giving him credit. And I personally didn't quite think that was 100% fair. I think we've given Stoner a fair amount of credit.
I think we've been defending the guy against it's a bike type of point of view for a long time. So
right. I mean, I do. I'm not saying he's, you know, motorcycle god, because it, you know, it is a, it's a, it's a team effort, and there was a lot of things that came together to make his 2007 season what it was. But still, yes, a lot of that was Stoner.
I have to say, I think a lot of it, you know, kind of bounced out of the what happened, you know, after the race, because Stoner got. I mean, I don't know if you want to jump ahead. I guess we might as well talk about Stoner.
Let's just go all over the map. Yeah, let's go ahead and jump ahead.
Okay, so there was a lot of booing of him on the podium, and while he was doing the cool down lap, and actually he didn't really get much of a cool down lap because there was a track invasion. And you know, it was just kind of. I was thinking about it, and I was, you know, I think Casey is just not enough of a persona to have much of a fan following, and people. He has to realize that, like, I mean, he doesn't need to change. I mean, he's not going to change. He's who he is, and he's an incredible racer, very talented. He's the only one who's been able to master the Ducati 800 cc bike, especially this year. I mean, it's ridiculous how much better he is on that bike than everybody else. But you know, even Colin Edwards has a bigger fan following in England than Casey Stoner does, because he's just fun off track, and you know, he's fun to watch. He's a personality. He's been around a long time. I think Casey Stoner is going to gain his popularity more slowly than some of these riders.
I agree. Including, I mean, I've even had Australians. I've had an email from Australians that have said that they, as a person, as a celebrity, as a charismatic guy, they're not overly thrilled with Casey Stoner. And you know, that might not be 100% fair, because he's young and everybody has their own personality and all of that. And, you know, I mean, I've never met the guy, so I don't know. He might just be a barrel of laughs and the nicest guy you've ever met in real life. But the way he comes across is a bit, kind of a combination of standoffish with, I don't know, I almost hate to say it, but a little bit put upon, you know, whiny. Almost. I mean, not whiny is a strong word, and I won't say that, but you know what I mean, right?
Yeah, no, I think actually he's a very frustrated guy, because he did completely dominate the season last year,
mm-hmm.
and he had to defend the fact that he dominated, you know?
Right, like, and that like, wasn't fair last
year. That's
totally not
fair. I mean, think about how much crap Nicky Hayden took.
Yes, and still takes.
And he still does, and you know, I mean, and his championship was really won. You know, I'm going to say, like, you know, a goodly amount based on luck and the misfortune of others. That was definitely not the case with Casey Stoner.
No, you know? Exactly. Stoner went out there and he frickin' rode brilliantly, and for whatever reason. And I'm not saying for whatever reason because it was just the bike, because it wasn't. That was clear. Because Caparossi, although you know he had his own host of issues and everything, you know, Stoner was clearly going to beat Caparossi.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned earlier on, where the Stoner is the only guy that's mastered the Ducati, and this is not like the Pedrosa versus Hayden kind of thing, where it's like, you know, wow, Pedrosa's out there and he's consistently finishing, you know, two or three or four places higher than Hayden. You know, this is Stoner finishing and qualifying 14 places ahead of Melandri.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
From the front of the grid to the back.
Casey winning and Melandri barely, you know, managing to score points.
Exactly. And, and so, I mean, this shows to Stoner's skill. But he's not sort of, I don't know, he just doesn't have that charismatic personality to make the press work for him rather than against him, and all of that sort of thing. And to the fans as well. And so some of the comments that he made at Donington during the cool down lap, when there were supposedly some so-called fans out there that were booing him and holding up signs, calling him a wanker and stuff like this, which is totally uncool. Mm-hmm. And he said something in the post-race interview along the lines of, you know, I don't know what I have to do to make you people, you know, happy,
respect kind of you or whatever. Yeah. And,
right.
And actually that's he's totally right saying that, because what does he have to do?
Right.
But,
right.
But you don't say that in front of a camera. I mean,
that's, you know, the thing. That's the part where he comes across as a bit, put upon, you know, right. What I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel bad for him. I think that that you know, in years ago when coverage of motorcycle racing was really just about results, you didn't have sponsorships and these guys, you know, being huge personalities, very, very famous all over the world. He would have been treated exactly the same way as anybody else, you know.
Right.
But now it's a show, and unfortunately, you know, that's just the way it is.
Right, exactly. And we can bemoan the fact all we want, but it's not going to change.
No.
And but if anything,
the reality is he's a fantastic racer, and he's still in the running in this championship. And you know, I'm actually thinking that his chance of winning the championship is pretty slim at this point. It's going to be very, very hard, and it's going to take you know, a couple of mishaps for guys ahead of him. But that doesn't mean he's not kicking some serious butt. I mean, this Qatar and Dunnington were just total. I mean, he just completely owned the entire weekend.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And he does. He has the chops. He has the talent. And if he can pull it together, you know, if things come together as well as they did for him at Donington, you figure he pulled 5 points off of Rossi because he, you know, Stoner won, Rossi came in second. And if that were to happen at every one of the remaining rounds, which is, that's a, you know, if, right? But he'd win the championship.
Yeah.
Because, he'd pick up enough points on Rossi to do that. But like you say, all it's going to take is for Rossi to have one bad weekend, right? Which is completely not unreasonable. That's actually, you know, almost better than even odds that will happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then and Stoner's closed up his gap a lot, because right now, as we
but
stand
he
after
also has
Dunnington,
to, it also has to happen to Pedrosa, and it also has to happen to Lorenzo, because Lorenzo's back.
Yes. And you're right. And so like we were talking about at the beginning of the season, where we're not going to know the outcome of this championship until closer to the end, I think that's still true. And while right now you look at the standings roughly halfway through the season, it's like, wow, Rossi's got a 55-point lead.
Oh, 45 over Stoner.
45?
Yep.
117, 117. Yeah.
Math is hard, isn't it, Bob?
It is hard, 45. And I'm having a tough 45. Time. I'm literally sitting here adding this up in my head. You're right, it is 45.
He came in with 50.
So, and then what's that?
He came in 50 behind, and he left 45. So
right. And you know, so it's still well within the certainly within the mathematical possibility, and definitely well within the realistic possibility for Stoner to make up that distance.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Rossi did do it in 2006. He did
indeed
catch up,
he did.
But
yes,
it was very, very, very a lot of hard work and a lot of bad results for Nicky Hayden. That made that happen.
You know, if anything, Stoner might be coming in almost at somewhat of a good time because, okay, we're, you know, much as we love Rossi and much as Rossi has said that he'll be racing out there till he's, you know, 63 or whatever the hell it was and all of that, Rossi's a lot older than Stoner. You know, Stoner's just beginning his MotoGP career. Rossi is relatively on the tail end. He's probably got, realistically, 5 really good years left. You know, so Stoner might be able to have some Rossi-free races, which would take one serious competitor out of the mix. But he's still got guys like Pedrosa, who's very, very good as well.
And young.
Yes, exactly. And
young. Lorenzo.
And Lorenzo.
Vizioso and guys coming up from 250s next year, for sure, you know.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
He's going to have his work cut out.
Mm-hmm. So I want to put out that I admire and respect Casey Stoner for his ability and his talent and his attitude of you know, being a good rider, you know, going out, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to do well, and he can do it. He can turn in lap after lap after lap very, very well and all of that sort of thing, make the machinery work for him and so on and so forth. But I still somewhat stand behind the comments that as far as being a showman, that like you say, the whole thing is a show and all of that, that Stoner's still got a lot of growth and a lot of maturing to do.
Yeah, it may never happen because, you know, McEwen didn't become interesting until you know, he became a commentator
until he retired from racing. Yeah, exactly. And he's still kind of the grumpy old guy in the paddock.
Well, at least he gets into some, you know, bar fights.
Yeah, that's what Stoner should exactly. do. I don't. Yeah, does Stoner even go to bars?
I don't know.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it. Yeah. You're not going to see a lot of pictures of Casey Stoner and Colin Edwards and John Hopkins down at, you know, that kind of bar.
Oh, man.
You might see Rossi there, but the other people have other things to say about that. We're not even going to go down that road.
Okay.
Okay.
So,
wow.
The race for second place was really good. So basically, Stoner completely ran away with the race. I mean, it was pretty obvious that he had good pace and that only some kind of, you know, setup mishap would have, because that did happen to him at Mugello, I believe, where he had a very good pace the whole weekend, and then he couldn't, he was complaining he could just couldn't do it during the race. But
right, but no, he did. He now, my memory is failing me, did he get the whole shot right off the get-go, or did he
here? Oh yeah.
Yeah, at Donington. Yeah,
he was just gone right from the beginning, and he was a bike length ahead, you know, second corner.
Right. Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah. And then all you saw was Stoner's tailpipe. Yep. I mean, he just, yeah. And it was back to a little bit like the last year races where we had so many complaints and all of that, where it was a runaway and all that. But again, like last year's races, yeah, sure. The race for the lead may have been somewhat in the bag, but farther down the grid, you had some fantastic wheel to wheel, you know, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? Racing action. And yeah. This is probably, I mean, we saw a little bit of Rossi Pedrosa sort of action going on.
Definitely. I mean,
definitely.
I think that this race has now convinced me that Pedrosa's and his team's strategy is all about the first two thirds of the race. He was so fast on that spring valve Honda that he was actually able to, and his braking is getting, he's getting really good on the brakes. He was able to pass Valentino on the, at the end of the straight several times, but then he made mistakes. I think he's just, I don't know, maybe he's got a little bit, I don't know, he gets a little bit intimidated when Rossi's right next to him, and he made mistakes in those Dunlop, on the Dunlop Bridge, the following S's. What are those called?
The Fogarty S's.
Fogarty S's, thank you.
Right.
How could I forget that? And twice he got past there, once on the inside, once on the outside, by trying to block, knowing that Rossi had better speed into those S's. He was trying to block, and Rossi just outsmarted him both times that happened.
And in Pedrosa's defense on that, he's racing against Rossi, and that's a difficult thing to do.
Exactly.
You know, if he's next to you.
But then, you know, two-thirds, maybe three-fourths of the race through, his pace just got slower, and whereas Rossi was just pulling out the same lap after lap after lap, his times did not really fall.
Right.
So I really think that there's some kind of efficiency mode that the Honda has to drop into, the way they have their mapping set up.
For fuel efficiency,
yeah.
For tires?
I think that they throw more fuel at the beginning of the race, and then hope that Danny's got a big lead like he did at Catalunya, but then he fades. And
I think
this has been five races where it's happened.
Yeah, I think that we are starting to see a pattern, and that's actually a very safe and good strategy for Honda to pursue with Pedrosa, because he is clearly outstanding when he's off by himself.
And he's also an amazing off the when the red lights go out. He's amazing.
Oh, these kids with their damn fast reaction times, you know. Yeah. But yeah, he does. He gets good starts and he does well. And while we talk about, you mentioned the spring valve engine, we're just going to be completely all over the map here. That because Hayden was running the pneumatically valved engine there at Donington.
Yeah, and I don't know if you read about what happened to he at one point was fighting for fourth place quite well. And there was one lap where he really fell off pace, and it turned out after the race that a warning light came on his dashboard, and it was basically he was distracted by it. I don't know what the warning light actually might have meant.
Check engine.
Yeah, check engine. It's time for an oil change.
Yeah,
and it turned out to be just like a faulty warning light, but apparently he dropped off the pace because he was worried that something was wrong, and because it is the first time he raced this motor, I think that cost him a few places. That's kind of a shame.
Yeah, I hadn't read that about the warning light, and that's it is true. And you watch the lap progression, because I mean Hayden was having a wonderful race, is you know probably one of his better races of the season.
Yep.
And then, yeah, it did kind of taper off in the last third or so of the race. And a little bit of bummer to see, you know, that like Lorenzo, who started from just, where was Lorenzo on the grid? It was bad.
He was
17th on the grid.
Yeah, he was way in the back.
Awful qualifying position for Lorenzo.
Yep. Yep.
And he just, you know, these guys, he made up so much. So many positions on him, you know, so Lorenzo finished ahead of Hayden, which after, you know, considering that Hayden started first on the second row is, you know, kind of a tragedy for Hayden.
Yeah. Yep.
But speaking of tragedies, well,
oh boy,
there's a lot of them.
Let's go down the front to back, maybe.
Okay, let's go down. Yes, exactly. Front to back of the finishing the race. We've talked about Stoner already. We both agree that Stoner was on fire all weekend long, on the ball. Casey Stoner was really doing well. Right.
No, nobody came close to challenging him.
No, he didn't.
Rossi and Pedrosa had a great battle for quite a few laps.
Right. And now Rossi qualified second. Now Pedrosa qualifying comparatively sucked. He was ninth.
Yeah.
Which is got to be one of his worst qualifying positions so far. I don't off the top of my head know, but he hasn't been that far down that I recall for a while.
But he had a great start, and
oh yeah,
he was I think fourth actually, and then he lost a place to Hayden, I believe actually.
Yeah, I know. Right? Yeah, Hayden was ahead of Pedrosa, yeah, and it was like, go Nikki, you know, and that lasted for like 3 or 4 laps. But so then once Pedrosa and he started moving his way up the order.
And let's not forget also that Dovizioso was also had a fantastic start because
yes.
I mean he qualified actually I think he qualified on the second row, but
he did. He qualified so
he was ahead of Pedrosa, but behind Nikki, but he actually ended up ahead of them by the end of the first lap, and actually really by the first corner.
Right, exactly. And I mean, he was looking very, very strong there for the first several laps, and still, you know, was in the mix for quite a while. But it just, I think it was the satellite versus factory story played itself out eventually, and I think that was more his problem rather than any other, you know, lack of talent or anything like that.
Yeah, and I think it's not just that, but it's also the fact that there's only one bike on that team.
Yeah.
That definitely hurts, especially when you hear about Toseland and Edwards talking, and they both are sharing data.
Yeah, Edwards is such a great teammate. I mean, and it does. It seems like they're getting along very, very well, and sharing data, and it seems like that garage is a chummy place. So yeah. That's good.
And speaking of Edwards, he finished fourth,
right?
You know, quite far back from Danny. Sorry.
Yeah.
What was he? He was actually not far back. About 4 seconds.
About 4 seconds. So yeah, not exactly anything where you're going to be challenging for the podium.
He was never really anywhere close to these guys. Remember, Pedrosa did fade.
Yeah.
Because he finished 3 seconds behind Rossi, and so it looked like a procession at the end if you look at the results. But that's not the way it was.
No, you can't. I mean, that's the thing. It's not like baseball where you can just collect all these statistics together and get this picture of what happened. The race was much more than just a numbers game. But yeah, good finish for Edwards. He qualified fifth, finished fourth, so he picked up a spot. And I mean, compared to what we've been seeing from Edwards, where he typically finishes, you know, several positions down from where he qualifies, I would call this an excellent weekend for Colin.
Yeah.
He likes Donington, though. It's Donington is, and Assen, actually, coming up, is another one of Colin's favorite tracks.
Oh, I'm sure he loves that last...
Well, except for that last corner. That last corner kind of sucks. But
actually, so I'm looking at the lap times, because I was interested in seeing Pedrosa's times falling, and sure enough, he was like in the low 129s through about lap 16. He had one crappy lap. I remember that was actually due to a little mistake he made. Mm-hmm. Back into low 129s, but then from lap 20 on, he just started getting slower and slower and slower. Eventually, the last four laps, he was 1 second slower than Rossi, more than a second.
Yeah, I could see that. I'm looking at that.
That's quite a big difference.
Oddly, yeah. Actually, the last lap, Rossi had a comparatively terrible time. I wonder if, I mean, and the guy, we were going to talk about the fans rushing the track.
Right.
In somewhat, right. And I don't want to, you know, I don't want any Anglo, I'm not being an Anglo hater here, but yeah, somewhat typical British soccer hooligan fashion. People ran out onto the track at the end of the Donington race and caused basically problems because the race was still going on, people.
Yeah.
And that hadn't happened by the time Rossi, you know, so I'm not sure why his last lap was so comparatively slow.
Well, I mean, maybe he came out of the last corner and did a wheelie.
Actually, Stoner, big wheelie across the line, which is unusual for him.
And he also had a quote-quote slow lap.
Yeah, exactly, quote-quote. So, all right, let's see. Going down the race classification, we've covered top four spots.
Fifth,
Dovizioso, yeah. And again, picked up a spot, you know, qualified well, finished well. I think Dovizioso had a good weekend overall. Jorge Lorenzo, finishing sixth.
Wow.
And like we talked, fantastic weekend for him since he qualified so poorly. And even with the wet qualification, with the wet session on qualifying, I'm not 100% sure why he was so far down the grid. Did you read anything about that? Was his lap spoiled or something? Or was it just...
I don't think so. I think he was just gingerly taking his time getting back
into
it.
Didn't want to crash and break any more bones and screw things up, maybe?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, because he was...
Darren Carpenter wrote us that great email about the whole concussion issue. One of the most dangerous things about concussion is that it stays with you for a long time. Like the membrane of the brain and stuff is weakened, and if you fall and smack your head again, that could be the end of the career of a racer.
Right.
So he's got to be careful.
Concussions are only just now becoming. I mean, they're very poorly understood, and I think it's relatively recent, and this is let's digress into some war stories here, that a concussion will get you a Purple Heart.
Oh, really?
Yes. In fact, when I was, from my experiences in Iraq, my convoy team did okay, but the other convoy team in my battalion, there was several Purple Hearts. One guy got two, and they were all for concussion.
Wow.
Yeah, and so I think the other team got like six or seven Purple Hearts. And I mean, we've got guys that are on, you know, disability and all of that. And so it's good to see that people are realizing that concussion is so serious. But on the other hand, we still have a lot to learn. You know, the human medical science and all of that has a lot to learn of what the hell is going on. But you figure your brain is in this sack, right? And when your brain sack smashes up against the inside of your skull, you know, you're looking at this sort of spongy mass that is your brain, bashing into something that's really hard that is your skull.
I'm really enjoying this.
You like this? This is you know, quality talk.
MotoGPOD MD.
Yeah, and exactly, you know, Quincy. Yeah. And so Quincy. Wow, there we go. That's old school. But no, this it is. It's bad news, and you cause a lot of stuff. I mean, there's so much going on in the brain. You know, you read about, you know, we see it every day, and we're all computer literate people. We're listening to a podcast, for crying out loud, right now. Off the bat, we're geeks. But when you consider what your brain retains and the amount of, you know, what's going on in there, and the amount of hard drive space that you have in your brain, because everything that you've ever done is in there somewhere. It's just the fact that you can't always retrieve it, and it's kind of weird.
But you're working on that, right?
I am. I'm thinking retrieval. That, you know, beer is the magic lubricant that brings those memories to the surface.
Great.
All right. Enough digression about weird chit chat of concussions in Iraq and all of that business. So Lorenzo, yeah, that would explain it. You know, kind of let's take it a little easy today.
I think what happened during the race was that all of that went out the window, and the bull.
Well, it was dry,
and yeah. Well, not just that, but I think he saw the red, and the bull woke up, and nothing was going to stop him from actually racing.
Yeah, I suppose that makes sense, and from what we know of Lorenzo, that would kind of be a reasonable assumption, and all of that. So yeah, and I mean, let's face facts. Some guys, let's see, other rain races, Lorenzo. I nothing's coming to the top of my head. Those memories are buried. But you know, some people do better in the rain. And I so want to have a big old digression about my last track day, and I'm resisting. but in any case, Lorenzo made up a whole lot of positions, and he finished sixth after qualifying 17th. And I think that was a very, very admirable effort. And he did, you know, really, really super good race. And managed to pass 7th place finisher Nicky Hayden, who, like we just said, qualified on the second row and ended up losing 3 spots, you know, on his pneumatically valve Honda. And that may be because of the check engine light, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, it looks like, based on the lap chart, I'm guessing that it was around lap 15, 16 that he had that issue with the light, because he dropped like 4th places and then had to fight back against Vermeulen again.
Right.
Because he and Vermeulen were fighting for quite a few laps in the beginning of the race. He did eventually pass Vermeulen, but then he got caught by Lorenzo, and Lorenzo passed him.
Right, exactly. So, and Assen is another, I mean, circuit that Hayden. So I'm looking forward to it. And have you heard anything? Are they going to be using the pneumatic engine there? Or?
Well, he is definitely. I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we're not going to. I don't think we're going to know about Pedrosa and the pneumatic engine until he's actually on it. Actually, probably after the race.
You know, in a lot of ways, to be honest with you, it'd be a little bit like, why, you know, if it isn't broke, don't fix it. And until you start seeing, you know, Hayden beating Pedrosa because of the pneumatic valve engine, I think Honda would be crazy to do that.
I mean, we didn't see a top speed of Hayden's bike. The Donington is not really a track where you get to top speed. Assen actually has sections where you can get very, very fast. So that'll be interesting. Actually, that's a good thing. It's a good thing to watch for.
It will be a good one to watch. And then, yeah, exactly. I mean, and then once we start prognosticating and all of that, we're to Laguna Seca, where the pneumatic valve engine's not going to make a difference much.
Yeah. And Saxon before that. But then when we get to Brno, that's going to be really interesting again.
Right. And that's exactly what I was thinking. You got a thing. Yeah. And, oh, Saxon Ring. Yeah. How could I leave it out? The glorious Saxon Ring. But, which is a mix, actually, of whether or not the pneumatically valve engine is going to be a big old advantage or not. In any case, yeah, Brno will be somewhat of a telling point. So let's see, going on down, finishing 8th, Chris Vermeulen. Had a fantastic qualifying session because he's a rain specialist. He's somewhat, whether he likes it or not, getting a reputation as that. But he's very, very good in the wet. And
you know, and I don't know if did we mention in the last show that the rumors about him leaving MotoGP, going back to World Superbike?
Yes. Well, and then there's been various sort of rumors going on of that, you know, that pretty much he's been, you know, he needs to start performing or Suzuki's going to be finding another rider, kind of a thing. We've seen some of those rumors.
But we know that Ben Spies is just waiting to get a ride with Suzuki, and they're very definitely are interested in having him, I think. And one of those guys is going to have to give either Caparossi or Vermeulen. And, you know, Caparossi obviously didn't get to race this weekend because he has a big nasty gash in his hand, but he is actually going to race at Assen. There was a lot of question marks about that, but it's not confirmed he is going to race.
Right, because he's not fully healed and all of that, and so we're using the patented Jules medical readiness method that puts him at something like 84.65% or something
like that,
along those lines. Yep. Yeah,
and we will. MD.
We're gonna. What's that?
MotoGPOD MD.
That's right. Exactly. We know it all here. And I do want to talk a little bit about speeds, and we'll get down to him in a second.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, going down the list of the race classification. Okay, so we're kind of gloss over Vermeulen a little bit. He ran a respectable race. Yeah, you know, he had a great qualifying session, and I think he did.
He had a great fight. He looked like he was good for fifth or sixth place, but Hayden found a little bit, and of course Lorenzo came through like a demon. So.
Yeah.
Suddenly,
yeah.
He found himself, following two guys that were behind him, within a lap. It looks like, looking at the lap chart, yeah, it was around lap 25. We didn't get to see that progression, unfortunately.
No, they didn't. They were concentrating too much on what was going on up front. So I'm looking at the numbers here, and his last four or five laps were in the 130s and all of that. And he was probably affected by the fans rushing the track, sort of a thing, because he had, let's see, well, no, he was still a second behind on lap 29.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, a little hard to say on that one if you weren't there or if you didn't have the luxury of seeing every angle and that sort of thing. It makes you wonder what the race director, how much this guy sitting in a truck watching God knows how many. Did you read the one where they had more cameras on board the bikes than any other race at this thing? They had at least three cameras, I think, on every motorcycle.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. And there was four on something along those lines. There was 128 cameras out there for the whole MotoGP and 125s and 250s and all of that, and 90 of them were on MotoGP bikes.
Incredible.
And it's just like, my God. So, somebody is in there selecting, we want that shot from all these cameras, not to mention all the real, full-size cameras that you have spaced around the track, which is, what, 8 or 9 or 10,
yeah.
And then the pit cam and all of that. It's like, wow. And then you always have to show the team reaction. There's a big pass, so hey, let's cut to the garage for a little while and ignore the race and show somebody cheering or Sete's girlfriend. That was always the classic. Something happened to Sete, let's show his girlfriend.
I remember that.
You remember that?
Yeah.
And my wife used to always comment on that. Now we're going to see Sete's girlfriend.
And sure enough, bam.
It was in exactly that voice too. And okay, so moving down the list, let's see, where did we finish off talking about Vermeulen? Finishing ninth, Shinya Nakano.
Shinya's exactly
had a bit of a mixed season.
Well, it's not a mixed season. He's been finishing ninth or tenth pretty much the entire time.
Okay, you're right. His season has pretty much sucked ass. But he qualified 12th, so he picked up three spots.
Yeah.
Say that again, or scratch that. He qualified
10th.
He qualified 10th.
So he qualified 10th. Spot.
Yeah. So, yeah, Shinya Nakano is a bit of a enigma wrapped in a riddle, I think. his biggest mistake was that whole leaving Kawasaki thing.
Yeah.
But
yeah, he was just, I think he was just about to have a breakthrough and, well.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and I know. And it almost makes you wonder. And, let's go ahead and get into the whole, Japanese factories, Japanese writers, and all of that. Would Shinya Nakano still be out there if he wasn't Japanese? And, I mean, he's still in the top. I mean, he's certainly one of the top 18 riders in the world. But, I don't know.
There's rumors that Yuki Takahashi's coming up to MotoGP next year.
See, now Takahashi might be interesting to watch in MotoGP.
And, yeah, exactly. I mean, if he comes in, and if it's just the need to have a Japanese racer, then Nakano's going to have a tough time getting a ride.
Yeah, I agree. And another guy who should come up is Hiro Aoyama.
I think he should stick around for one more year in 250s because he's got...
Yeah.
He's got he's got it in him to win the championship.
Yeah, he's facing the same problem of somewhat being in the right place at the wrong time. He's, you know, the second level of cream or whatever you want to call it, kind of a thing. And I think, and plus, well, I mean, he's on the KTM and look what Callio has done and all of that. But how long has he been on the KTM? Was he on there last season?
He was, yeah. Yeah. But he had some great races with KTM before. So I think he's actually having a bit of an off season this year.
Mm-hmm. I think he's got the chops, but it's just, yeah, it might be. You need to timing. Timing is everything. Yeah. A guy I'd like to see, but he's too old, is Noriyuki Haga.
Well, you know, he's done his MotoGP bit.
I know he has, but you know, bring him back. Yeah. I mean, doing so well in Superbike, and it's just, you know, he's so different from so many of the other guys and all of that. It's like, you know, I like Haga. I like Haga a lot. He's probably my guy in Superbike.
Yep, same.
All right, 11th spot in the tenth spot in the race classification. Ant West.
Ta-da.
Disappointing Rider of the Year award goes to Ant West,
but he got a top 10, and he was actually interviewed, and it didn't sound like the world was ending.
Wow, that's a lot of progress going on for Ant West. Yeah, and let's see, this is how many points? Oh, it's his best finish of the season.
Yeah,
so by far.
Oh yeah.
So yeah. So yeah,
and his points.
We've talked about Ant West before, and he's a talented guy. He must be, but you know, I don't know. So all right, going on down the list, Tony Elias for Team Alice finishing 11th, which is unfortunately for their luck this year, is actually also quite good.
Mm-hmm.
let's see, he's finished better, and he's finished 10th. Or 11th before, so you know, but it's still a good finish.
Right. He had an 8th in China.
Yeah,
that was his best finish so far.
And considering he qualified dead last, which he's probably getting used to, he made a lot of progress going on up there, and that's a good thing. So it was good to see Tony Elias. We need to talk to Liam again, and we can't get, you know, we're not trying to get Liam to give us a lot of major mega inside gossip and dirt on his own team and all of that. But he has some excellent insights of what the hell is going on. and that's always good. So next, RDP finished a race, 12th. He was my pick for first DNF at Donington. And so I was wrong on that. My whole picks for Donington were
crap. my pick until the... So... First of all, it was really funny because it was my wife's birthday, and she said, Rossi has to win this race because it's my birthday. And I was like, okay. So we were doing – we were out somewhere, and I was using my my cell phone to do the picks, you know. And I put Rossi first, Stoner second, and I actually chose Toslin as the first off because I think he's a choker.
Wow.
And then then we got home, and she went to sleep, and I quietly went and switched Stoner and Rossi.
She doesn't listen to the show, does she?
Well, she does actually. She's gonna find out.
Oh,
she's gonna smack me. But I just didn't see Rossi being able to beat Stoner in this race.
And as we know from my last thing, I thought Rossi was gonna do it. But yeah, so RDP finished 12th. After qualifying 14th. So he picked up a couple of spots, which is kind of unusual for him. Managed to stay on the bike, which is also unusual. And, you know, that's kind of good.
Yep.
So, yeah. Didn't have to see his chest or anything. And please, no naked pictures. Damn it.
You're almost like you're asking for it, man.
I know. I have to bring it up every time because it's funny. It really is funny. But still, I don't need them. going on down the list, Sylvain Guittoli.
Not a terrible weekend for Alice.
No. Alice, I think the way their season has been going, they should consider this weekend quite good.
Yep.
And that's a bit of a shame because we know that the team is capable somehow or another of so much more.
Yep.
And 14th, and I want to talk a lot about Ben Spies. So Ben Spies finished 14th, scored 2 championship points in his first MotoGP outing. I don't know. I mean, he stepped in for Loris Caparossi. He had an excellent qualifying, I think.
Yeah, he was eighth.
I mean, he's on third row, qualified ahead of Pedrosa. First time out on a MotoGP bike, strange track. You know, everything is new, everything is different. Oh my God, I'm in a foreign country. What's this weird stuff they're eating, et cetera, et cetera. And I think Spies did quite well.
You remember? And, he must have gotten over his fear of flying by now.
Uh-oh, you're a little far away from the microphone there.
Oh,
but yes, he must have. He couldn't drive the motorhome across the Atlantic. So, if you haven't heard, Spies is not a big flyer. And does a lot of traveling in a big motorhome.
Yep. No, so that was very, very impressive. I mean, he did lose a lot of spots, and he basically stayed in, I guess, 15th for most of the race until Hopkins retired.
Yeah. Yeah. So he kind of picked up a spot because of that. But I think that, considering the rider's instructions to the new guy often consist of don't crash.
Right.
I think that that's admirable. I think Spies did very, very well, and he should be proud of himself. And yeah, I think he did a good job. And in some ways, I mean, Donington, what a first, these guys go to new tracks all the time. So, but still, your first MotoGP race is at Donington. It's probably, in some ways, not the easiest track. In other ways, yeah, it's not too bad. But I don't know. The some of the elevation changes, some of the cranar curves, some of the off-camber corners and all that sort of thing. This is, wow, your first time out on that, multi-million-dollar prototype motorcycle and you're at Donington. That must be a little intimidating.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, just look at the guys who were on the grid with him, so.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think he did fantastically in qualifying, and he did very, very well in the race. And he's got nothing to be worried about. And like you said earlier on, there is a spot somewhere when the musical chairs game really gets going. There's a spot for Ben Spies, especially based on our whole new AMA rule structure thing that we still haven't quite gotten into because I still haven't completely wrapped my head around it. He'll be somewhere in MotoGP next year.
Yep.
So, Alex De Angelis finished 15th, scored a point.
Despite falling.
Yes, exactly. And that was the impressive thing there. And only lost two positions. Even though, he crashed out, jumped back on the bike basically. And, in only 19 seconds too, according to the official, crashed out, rider okay. And then 19 seconds later, rejoined the race. So he didn't waste any time there.
He slid out in the middle of the track and was basically able to pick up the bike and just get going again. I mean,
he was, and that was a little scary too, how in the middle of the track he was.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It was difficult to watch.
He was kind of in the back to start with, I guess. I know.
Yeah.
He got quite a few riders behind him, actually. Because that happened on like the first or second lap.
It was early on, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm looking, trying to scan through the lap chart here for where he was at. And, it was on the second lap.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he lost, what, four or five positions?
Yeah.
And we'll get to the Toseland in a minute. Marco Melandri finished 16th in the race.
No points.
It's just,
and he got passed by the guy who fell.
Yes, got passed by the guy who fell. And I believe he got lapped. Did he not?
Melandri did not get lapped, no.
Melandri did not get lapped? Okay, because Toseland humiliatingly did.
Yeah.
And we'll get to Toseland in a second. Marco Melandri is just having a miserable season. He qualified 13th, one of his better qualifying positions of the whole year. Scratch that. I'm looking at the wrong chart, damn it.
No, he was not. He
Marco Melandri qualified 15th. Yeah.
Right.
Which is still one of his better qualifying positions of the year.
Oh, man.
I mean.
So, since we're on the topic of Melandri, we should mention, he's on the cutting block. It's now official. Super has come out and said that he needs to do something better in the next few races or they're going to be looking at other choices. And one of those choices could be driven out because he has tested. He's now had two tests, and the second test was significantly better. So, Yeah, I mean, Landry's got, you know, the Grim Reaper.
Yeah, staring over his shoulder. The Grim Sete. Yeah, and I mean, you know, let's dig him up and shake his hand and put him back on the bike. Because actually, I mean, Sete, he somewhat retired on an off note, you know, but I think he still had a few years left in him. And apparently, according to what we saw in the testing and stuff, he might be able to wrap his mind around whatever it takes around this motorcycle a little better than Melandri's been doing.
Yeah, you know, and the other thing is that it makes sense for Ducati to do this because I don't think Sete's coming back next year or anything like that. He would just be there to finish the season because I think that those rumors that we've been hearing forever about Nicky Hayden going to Ducati are finally going to materialize. I really think, first of all, that Nicky's being recognized as the kind of guy who could figure the Ducati out because of his riding style is so similar to his racing history is so similar to Stoner's that he might be and you know we know that he's been approached before by Ducati and we know that his contract is running out and we know that he's got to have some feelings to finally leaving HRC since they haven't really backed in the way he needed to be backed. So that means, you know, the Melandri 2-year contract is pretty much null and void, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And, with Hayden is such a Honda loyalist. I mean, his whole pro career has been on Hondas of one kind or another. And we've talked often enough about it before, about Hayden is the sort of the perfect company guy, but he might be getting sick of it, and Honda might be getting sick of him. That, you know, the results. And Ducati sells a lot of motorcycles in the United States.
Exactly.
And yeah.
Exactly.
So to see Nicky Hayden on some Ducati advertising and all of that, I think would be a good thing for Ducati.
Yep. Totally.
Especially since I think, well, Ducati is even more of a company that relies on race performance and all. You know, this is what sells their motorcycles, right? You know, win on Sunday, sell on Monday. Because they don't have as much going on the other end of motorcycling. They certainly don't have anything that you'd really call a cruiser, and you know, big old Goldwing baggers and all this sort of thing that Honda has.
Right.
I think that Ducati would probably make more use out of Nicky Hayden as far as an advertising tool than Honda has done.
Absolutely, and Nicky Hayden's a great personality. He's well liked. So I think that. I think things are going in that direction. Now, granted, a lot of the rumors are mostly on Crash.net, which is, you know, kind of like the weekly news of MotoGP. But
right. Alien Batboy is seen with Nicky Hayden. Yeah, it is. You know, it's but it, sometimes these rumors do have a basis in fact, and this has been a persistent one. And we do know that Ducati has, you know, there have been talks in the past. So yeah, I wouldn't be. I certainly wouldn't be an overly surprised, you know, oh my gosh, to see that come about. Be kind of interesting, actually, in a lot of ways, too.
I think it would be really cool to see if there would be a resurgence that would come with that.
Right. All of a sudden, Nicky's a little farther up on the grid.
Yep.
A little farther up in the order is finishing. Yeah, I know. It would be. It'd be super interesting. How big is Stoner off the top of your head? Do you know?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I'm looking. I'm just picturing what the podiums look like.
Yeah.
He's not tiny, but he's very skinny.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not. I mean, when you look at him and Pedrosa and Rossi, you know, Rossi's pretty much bending down to his knees to be on level with those guys.
Right, right. So but Rossi's so tall and thin. I mean,
Rossi's
six foot
something, I think, isn't he?
No, I think he's under 6 foot. I think he's like 5'11" or 5'10" or something like that. But he's very tall for a racer. But so is Hayden, and Hayden's comparatively stocky.
Oh, I'm sorry. You were talking about Hayden, right? Yeah,
Hayden Rossi. Yeah, yeah,
yep.
And you know, I mean, Hayden, you know, weighs all of like, you know what, like 160 pounds or something stupid. But he's a you know he's comparatively speaking. I mean, next to Pedrosa, he's a giant. You know.
Yeah.
And this motorcycle's been designed for Pedrosa, so. Back to more Nicky Hayden defending. So, all right.
Now it's time to talk about. Well, let's quickly talk about
James Toseland is our next in the finishing.
Actually, before we talk about that, let's just say that you know let's get rid of the Hopper thing.
All right.
So I think Hopper's going to become my next choice for most likely to DNF on the tipping.
Really?
Because his bike is just failing him. This is the third mechanical DNF he's had. And that doesn't even include the races he's lost because of mechanical problems that he was able to ride around, but which caused him, you know, to lose many places. He must not be a very happy camper.
No, right apparently now. They're shouting in the pits, yeah, or in the garage. Because Hopkins had, you know, qualified 11th, not exactly a superstar qualifying effort, but at least mid pack. And his race pretty much went downhill somewhat from there. I mean, where was he at in?
He was pretty much in.
He was got like, a terrible like, start. He was in second to last.
But he was in 10th by the time he actually retired. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, he did start. He started moving up the order. Hopkins has a whole lot of talent, but somewhat something is letting him down here. There's some kind of mix that's not working quite well.
Well, definitely. When your engine dies, that's a letdown.
That's a big letdown. Generally, kind of screws up your race. On the other hand, he's resisted the bike kicking, which is growth for Hopkins.
Yeah, so. It's been 2 years since he's kicked a bike.
Yes, I know, but we'll never let him forget it.
No,
because that's how we do things here at MotoGPOD. So, and that was. Did you hear any details on what that was? Was
no.
it an electrical problem?
Of course.
Yes, it was an electrical problem. And apparently all the MotoGP teams get their electricals from Lucas. And, Hopkins DNF'd, mid-race or so. Yeah,
pretty much right smack in the middle.
Yeah, lap 16, lap 17. And so that puts our race finisher and the guy we've got to talk a little bit about here, big time, our piano-playing hero, James Toseland.
Ugh. Poor guy.
Major poor guy. I mean, talk about so much pressure, so much hype, so much buildup of, you know, hometown hero, British boy is going to come back to Donington and wipe the floor with everybody. And it just didn't materialize.
No, he had a bad weekend all around. Obviously, a terrible qualifying session.
Right.
And it really... kind of burns me because Carl Fogarty before they even arrived at Donington was saying that Toseland doesn't have what it takes to he doesn't have the heart to win a MotoGP race.
Hey, Fogarty is such a freaking ass. I mean,
thank you. I was just going to say,
you know,
he says
stupid stuff all the time, and even if that was true. The last thing James Toseland needs is Carl Fogarty, British World Superbike hero, going on and saying that. Yeah. You know, it's like, why can't you keep your mouth shut and let the limelight be on somebody else?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Exactly. That kind of thing just torques me off.
You get this quote from Fogarty, and it's always this, like, bitter, negative comment about somebody.
Right, but not bitter and cynical in a fun way like me.
Right.
It's just plain bitter.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember reading that. I was like, oh, James is going to show him. And, ugh.
Yeah. He qualified 16th, so he didn't have a very good qualifying session. There's probably, you know, various issues of what happened and this and that. Of course, I mean, it was pouring down with rain that alone, it just muddles up the whole, everything.
Yeah.
At least it was truly raining. It wasn't that half dry, half wet thing. I mean, it was really raining.
Right.
But in any case, and I think that basically once the race was dry, and he's just like, I've got to push, and he just pushed it too hard, and it was first corner.
Yeah.
I mean, God, and it wasn't even like there was a whole lot of other, another incident involved. It pretty much looked like it was. Just James.
It was
out there
just
crashing.
James. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm going to just say it. Last year during World Superbike, you know, the last few races when it really started to matter, when Haga was pulling him in, he started choking. And
yeah.
I don't want to call him a choker because I've really changed my mind about him watching him in MotoGP. I was not very impressed with him in World Superbikes. I thought he won a lot of races. Very craftily, but in general, he was not a
championship race material.
Yeah, exactly. I just didn't think he was in the same class as Bayless or Haga. Right. But I completely changed my mind this year watching him. Actually, it was really started with Qatar before even the race, when he was on the grid and he was on the front of the grid. And he had this intense, concentrating look on his, this unbelievable focus on his face, and it was really quite something, actually. And then, you know, right from the bat, top 10 finishes here and there. He was fifth in the championship for a while, and then this was just, you know, it just actually goes, maybe he doesn't deal so well with the pressure. This is just too much pressure for him to handle, and I just hope he can bounce back from it, because he, I think he got lapped like halfway through the race already, because he was so far behind.
Was it?
It was almost like a,
yeah,
like he was just kept riding because something inside of him was just saying, you know, the last thing I want to do is pull into the garage without finishing this race.
Right, right, right. And there may have been damage to the bike and all sorts of things.
No, there was.
Why?
He was missing half the brake lever. He was missing, but you know, most riders would have pulled in.
Would have quit at that point. Yeah,
of course. Yeah,
yeah.
So you know, I mean,
that in some ways that says something, and in some ways it's a little bit like, dude, why bother?
You know? I mean, that says something too. Like, maybe that determination. I mean, he could have caused an accident. He could have hurt himself.
Right. We don't need rolling chicanes out there.
No.
On the other hand, you have to admire the guy that just, you know, it's not like he's going to just call it a day when he can go out there and conceivably score a point or two, you know, based on you know, some incidents further up the field.
Right,
because it wouldn't have taken much, and it's not too far of a stretch for two other guys to have, you know, crashed out or retired or whatever, and then all of a sudden put Toseland in the points.
I strongly, strongly doubt that that's why he was writing. I think he was writing because
I'm trying to be charitable here.
He knew that there were no. I think he was doing it for the fans. They wanted to see the 52 go around.
Yeah, yeah, and that's probably true too.
You know,
He had apparently an enormous following based on shirt count there at the race. Because, I mean, it's been a long time since Britain had a MotoGP winner. Barry Sheen was the last. And how many years ago was that?
30?
Yeah. It was, wasn't it?
So, approaching 30.
Yeah, in that range. And, you know, and this is, no, these, really, these are the true people, I mean, that actually...
Jeremy McWilliams won a race in 2001, I believe.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But in any
Australia,
case...
I think.
Yeah, it's, you know, they... Britain, you know, I mean, especially, you know, this is a country that somewhat prides itself on basically having invented the sport.
Yeah.
In some ways. And, you know, they just, they're not having a whole lot of luck out there as a nation. And, so yeah, and that's a good thing from Toseland, and I would like to see him do better. He will.
He has been better. This is just a miserable, miserable weekend for him.
Sure.
But it does show that you know, his zen-like quality that I thought he might have maybe just cracked.
Possibly. You know? Yeah. He. Yeah, and he's also – this is his rookie year of MotoGP. A lot of these tracks are new. Most, by far, in fact, are new.
Well, I'm sure he's been at Donington.
Yes. I would think he's probably been at Donington, and that's probably half the problem.
Maybe.
Is that he just had to be – you know, he's like, I could do this. I've done this before. I know that first corner, Red Gate and all of that. And apparently, you know, one thing or another, and had a mishap.
Right.
But it was sad to see. It's always hard. I mean, and we had the same thing last year, Laguna Seca, with Hopkins and Hayden getting into a mix-up at effectively their home race, and it's, you know, that wasn't good. So
speaking of Tozer, there was a very interesting little interview with him just before the race, where he was talking about why he joined Yamaha, and he said that because remember so many people were saying, why? Like, he should have stayed one more year at World Superbike and gone to the HRC or something. And he has such a good relationship with Honda. He, you know, I'm not sure if he burned bridges completely, but I'm sure it was a it was not a amiable parting for him to go to, you know, rivals Yamaha.
Right.
And he was saying that, you know, he basically went because of Colin Edwards and Valentino Rossi. He knew that Rossi would be pushing the development of the Yamaha, so he would be on a good bike, and that totally turned to be true. And he also, you know, has tremendous respect and a good friendship with Colin Edwards. So it's kind of neat that, you know, that his decision-making was around the people, not necessarily the bike or the team.
Or the money.
I don't know. Yeah. I have no idea what the money situation looks like for him, but
I'm sure it looks quite well.
Yeah.
But at least if nothing else, there was a valid rationalization and all of that. I mean, which you didn't have with Hopkins, you know, it's like really the only thing you can say with Hopkins was money. That they waved around bags of money.
He went to the green bike with lots of greenbacks.
Exactly. Greenbacks. And I mean, and we've talked about that on the show, that, you know, hey, these guys have a limited number of years. They are risking literally their lives. And, you know, that might be a stretch. It's been a while since we had a rider die, thank God. But they're certainly risking, you know, very, very serious injury and everything else. And I think they deserve the money a lot more than some actor on some dumb sitcom that's making, you know, $1 million a week to do his thing. And this is the show that we watch. What's that?
Or a NASCAR driver.
Or a NASCAR driver. I mean, well, even a NASCAR driver, you know, I mean, it looks damn dangerous sometimes.
Yeah,
but, you know, and I don't know a lot about injuries and all that in NASCAR. But I do know that MotoGP riders tend to keep themselves in better shape. I saw a commercial, and it was Tony Stewart, who is quite a famous NASCAR guy, I guess. No idea where he's in the standings, but he's, you know, I know who he is vaguely. And I didn't even know who the hell he was. And it's just like this fat guy in the parking lot. And then the end of the commercial, you realize this is Tony Stewart or whatever. And it's like, oh, my God, you know, that guy needs to cut back on the fried food because it's not looking good, dude. But, you know, when the car weighs that much, big deal if the driver weighs 265?
Oh, man, that's funny.
Yes. Okay, we digress. Again, that's 19 stone for you people in the English thing, by the way, 265. Odd-ish, if I recall my stones correctly. So there we go. we finished our Donington wrap up there.
Somehow we managed to get to the end.
Yes, we managed to get through it. Quite a bit of medical chit-chat, some blubber chit-chat, all sorts of stuff. It's been an interesting call. It always is with you, Jules. I like talking to you on the phone.
Before you throw me off the line, I did want to say that now that we've had two races where we had this track invasion, I didn't mention this at the beginning of the show also, that so the safety commission, which is headed by Rossi, Stoner, and I believe Hayden, has called, basically asked for you know, more stewards and more security at future races because of this latest invasion. And the story that's on Autosport news includes a very interesting note, which is I had no idea because I was actually not really following MotoGP racing back then, but apparently in Jerez in 1996 that there was a track invasion because Crivier was looked like he was going to beat Doohan, and it was on the last lap and everybody ran out, started running out on the track before the race was over, and it caused Crivier to hesitate. Then Doohan passed him, and Crivier tried so hard to catch him that he ended up crashing and got no points, and you know, basically lost 25 points to Doohan, his main challenger that year. So,
and obviously wrist injury and all of that, you know, based on. And I mean, it's not like there's no fence or anything like that. You know, you have to climb fences. You have to sneak around. This isn't something where, like the Isle of Man or a rally or something like that, where you can just walk out onto the track. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And there really is no excuse for it other than you know, the same kind of boorish, how do you like that for a word? Boorish behavior you know, like when NBA guys, the team wins a championship, and so let's go have a riot and burn cars. And, you know, it's what the hell? Yeah. And and the funny thing is I'm trying to think at Laguna Seca, and I don't remember seeing anybody going on the track after the race there.
There was actually, I remember in 2005, I was taking some pictures of a hill overlooking turn two and three, and a couple guys did climb the fence, which is actually, it was a really very tricky fence to climb over.
Yeah. If I recall, there's barbed wire.
this is that section between two and three. So yeah, that's a very tall section of, mm-hmm. of fence. I think that maybe they jump over the little fence that's behind there and then jump through one of those photographer holes or something. And because I remember seeing just two fans running up to Nikki Hayden and then getting mm-hmm. dragged away by the marshals.
Yeah, and this is not some English bashing session or anything like that. Or I mean, God, we see it. Mugello, right? And
yeah.
Liam always talks about where it's like you have to shut the garage really quick, otherwise, you know, everything's going to be gone.
Right, right.
And
is that where his weather station got stolen?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, and it's just like, you know, guys, come on, you know, don't be a bunch of dicks. It's just, I don't know. Celebration and all that is wonderful. Running around.
But it's a danger part. I'm just against. I don't mind them running onto the. I think it was one of the coolest things to see at Mugello, and here was that sea of people in front of the podium. But you know, let the guys finish.
Yeah.
Let them have the cool down lap too.
Sure, exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's still motorcycles moving around very rapidly. There are still guys fighting for position and championship points. The last thing they need is the distraction of some bozo wandering around the track, or lots of bozos. And, you know, it's just not a good thing. And I don't know. Now, like Rossi's fan club must have some kind of semi-official access, you know, when they get out there and rent those, don't
right,
you think?
Right.
Or
you just have to have a yellow shirt on, I think.
Yeah, yeah, whatever it is. And that's one thing. But, you know, look, if you're not one of Rossi's buddies that's in on the whole joke of, you know, let's put the blow-up doll on the motorcycle or, you know, whatever it is that week, then stay off the damn track, you know?
I'm sure it's not for you. I'm sure those things are planned in advance. And
oh, they're way planned, yeah.
And those guys have, you know, passes up the wazoo.
Right. Right. And, and it's just, like I say, is a little bit, you know, stay off the track, show, if you are a race fan, then show the riders the respect that they deserve and, you know, just be a fan and live with it that you're not going to get to touch Nikki Hayden or Valentino Rossi or James Toesland or whoever it is. Right. So, well, all right.
Okay.
Yeah, that was good, and it was great talking with you. And I do want to thank all of the British fans. I mean, we got a lot of email. I think you got most of the stuff that I got. I think we exchanged back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Some answers and stuff. And there was a lot of great stuff. And thank you very much, all you guys out there. If we didn't mention your email or anything, I really, really do appreciate it. I'd love to hear the, you know, I was there and this is what I saw, sort of a story. And like I covered earlier on in the show in the intro. So thanks a lot, guys. And thank you, Jules. I appreciate the time. And we'll talk to you again real, real soon. We really didn't get to much of an Aston preview, so we'll just have to have a really good race wrap-up for Aston next week.
Just remember, everybody, it's on Saturday.
Yes, yes. Do not forget. It's a weird one. This is one of our two Saturday races every year. And don't forget. So if you're going to watch it live, it's a day earlier than usual.
Yep. Right on. Take care, Bob.
Talk to you later, Jules. Ciao. Bye-bye. That's going to do it for our call with Jules. Thanks again to Jules for being on the phone with us, and thanks again to you out there in MotoGPOD land for taking the time to download the show and listen to it all the way to the end. I appreciate the fact that you guys do that. The show has grown by leaps and bounds beyond what I've ever expected it would be 3 years ago when I started it. So one thing I do want to mention, one last thing, and this is Joe Pop, listener, MotoGPOD listener Joe Pop, sent me an email a few weeks ago, and this was really, really great stuff. He's talking about his band that he's in. They're called the Horn Rims, and he sent me a few of their songs, and I listened to it, and I said, you know, these guys are great, and I sort of described it to me. It struck me as a sort of a cool mix between kind of classic, old school, good punk, like the Circle Jerks and the Germs and stuff like that, but where these guys can actually play their instruments, which is a bit different than the Germs, combined with some of the sort of vocal, they really reminded me a little bit of Collective Soul, but edgy and not sort of wimpy. So you got to listen to them. Check them out, The Horn Rims. They, of course, they have a website, and that is at thehornrims.com, and they are on iTunes as well. So you might want to take a look on iTunes, do a search for Horn Rims. This is Joe Pop and his buddies doing a great band. They've got an EP up there for download on iTunes, and he's a listener of MotoGPOD, so I encourage you to go and take a listen, support it, spend the 99 cents for a song or two or three or $9.99 for the whole album or whatever it is up there on iTunes. Give it a listen. I think that you'll like it if your tastes of music are similar to mine at all. And I think that other than that, we are about done for the day. So again, thanks very much for downloading the show. Don't forget that Aston is on Saturday, so if you watch it live, you better be there a day early. And other than that, we are about done. So keep the shiny side up, and we'll talk to you next week. As you know, I try to make the disclaimers that I do at the end of every show kind of different, a little bit funny, maybe something. Sometimes they are stupid. Sometimes they're actually funny. They're just a variety of different things. Got a little lazy about that and haven't been recording too many different ones because kind of running out of good ideas. So this is the I just don't know what to do disclaimer. And MotoGPOD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I am solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them. So I'll tell you what, if you would like to do a disclaimer, just send me an email, ask for the text. I'll shoot you off the text so you can read it. And perhaps in a different language, something like that. Funny voices, you know, women, just get your dog to bark it, whatever you want to do. And we'll sort of spice up these disclaimers because I like to put the disclaimer in there because it's not an official show and I think it's kind of necessary. So I've managed to ramble on to this one just over a minute now, so I'm going to call it good.